Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 191 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, good to see you.
Good to see you, bud. Another big week.
Yeah, so we're into October. We avoided red September. September actually was green. You're now in October, which is typically Bitcoin's second best performing month, only behind November. So on average, Bitcoin has done almost 22% in October and almost 46% in November. And when September closes green, October has always closed green, and so has November. So the next couple of months could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if you remember to our first episode in September, I was like, I think we're going to have a green September. So here we are. I think October is going to be good. And a lot of that to me is just self-fulfilling prophecy. Like if everybody thinks it's going up and people buy, then it's going to go up, especially when it starts. And, we've been in this kind of trading range, 108 to 120 with a lot of 112 time. So we started this thing in that like low teens. So to me, if you're paying attention and you're looking at charts or you're watching what's going on and on TV talking about Bitcoin, then you're starting to want to buy, and 110 to 115,000 looks like a pretty good buy spot. So I think October will be good. I made a mistake, I think, selling covered calls in October. I'm like, ah, crud. Like I think those are gonna get called away, or I'm gonna have to roll them out. But like, do I want to roll them out into November when things might even go higher? So I gotta have a little strategy session with myself about what to do with some covered calls.
Well, I mean, the big question I always have is when's the peak? Because I think probably a year and a half ago, we said, hey, October 2025 should be the peak-ish. And it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I know CoinGlass tracks all the bull market peak signals, which I think there's about 30 of them. About 18 of them have made more than about 50% progress towards the sell trigger. And I think six are already about 80% on the way there. So we're getting closer. I still think we're a little ways away with everything. And I don't know if we're going to see the drop off that we have in the past either.
Well, it definitely feels like the start of a bull, not the end. Because I was just right on getting ready for this call. I was looking at the monthly chart, and it's like this boring incline with like a couple of drops and corrections and stuff. But I mean, it doesn't have that curve of an exponential chart or anything. So it just seems like we recovered, and then we've been kind of weird to say for Bitcoin, but like buying responsibly and then correcting appropriately like over and over again. So I don't see that there's a lot of froth or a lot of anything in the market. I mean, price is actually kind of boring. I mean, it's 10 months ago we broke 100,000. We're at 118 or so right now. So that's not crazy. That for Bitcoin, to me, we could be standing on close to the floor, right? 95,000 looks more like the floor, but we're not that far away from 95.
Yeah. Well, and there's a ton of things going on too. And maybe we start with everything that the SEC is doing, because the SEC, I feel like we used to talk about all the negative things that happened. And come February of this year, things have changed, and there's a lot more that the SEC is doing to make things more interesting. The first one that I was looking at was, I think a week or two ago, the SEC approved the generic listing standards, which is really going to open the door for, I think, all the altcoin exchange ETFs, right? So what you're seeing as of the end of last week and beginning this week is all the ETF issuers are going to start withdrawing their XRP, their Solana, their Cardano, their Doge, their Litecoin filings. And they're expecting with these new generic listing standing for all these to be almost approved automatically. And it could happen almost, I think Solana is expecting the first half of October. Although with the government shutdown looming, there's a possibility that doesn't happen that early and maybe gets pushed out a little bit.
Yeah, the government shutdown, and it coincides with October 1st and Bitcoin jumping like 4% in a day. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, the government gets out of the way a little bit, and Bitcoin and markets are fine.
Yeah, and Paul Akins also announced that he has plans to bring the securities markets on chain. Although he still hasn't really provided a lot of insight into whether or not the wallets used to trade those assets are going to require legal identification. So you would expect there to be some sort of KYC around it, and that it'll be somewhat in a walled garden. But it will be kind of cool to see all this stuff come on chain. We've been talking about the whole RWA concept for a while. And now that the SEC is jumping on board and saying they want to do this for the entire securities market, that's really intriguing.
No, I think of all of the use cases that look like they make a ton of sense, trading, getting brokerages on board with on-chain, even if it's just tracking or tokenization of securities, whatever, great use of it, because there's no funny business. There's no, you know, selling four shares when you only have two to sell, hoping that, you know, like basically fractional reserve equity trading. So I'm, as far as use cases go, putting securities on chain makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then the other big thing the SEC has done is it looks like they're opening the door for some investment advisors to use state trust as crypto custodians. So there's a couple of lawyers that are asking the SEC not to pursue any enforcement action against registered financial entities that are moving into crypto, which would really help clarify which financial firms can safely and legally hold digital assets, which right now are kind of tricky to manage due to the existing legal gray areas. And if that happens, now all these investment advisors have the option of putting crypto into the portfolio for all of their people, and things could go kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's still amazing to me that institutions, financial advisors, the entire industry, right? It's maybe 30% into Bitcoin, and we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of the launch of the ETFs. Like, that's real slow. You know, that's government speed stuff when, you know, there's profit to be made here. I mean, look at what BlackRock's doing. I mean, their Bitcoin ETF is making more money for them than their S&P 500 ETF. But usually when there's a profit carrot dangling in front of companies, they sprint to go after it. And it just hasn't been the case for these guys. Now, Vanguard is talking about getting into or allowing ETF access, crypto ETF access for its customers, which they were very serious. Zero exposure. We will not do this. This is not Vanguard, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. So if Vanguard is starting to, I think the headline I read was that they're eyeing digital asset ETFs for their clients. So they're not in it. They're not allowing access yet, but it's coming. I mean, Bitcoin's like gunpowder, right? You can adopt it and keep up with everybody, or you can not adopt it and you can get steamrolled by everybody that does. So I feel like Vanguard, that starts to loosen up as soon as they start giving clients access. That to me would be the signal for every conservative financial advisor, financial institution, and everybody else to, one, allow their clients into it, two, figure out how to custody it, and if that's what they want to do in order to move forward. But, you know, like I said, I say it maybe once a quarter, when you go to your Wells Fargo or Bank of America online banking and you see your checking account in US dollars and your savings account in Bitcoin, you know, then we can really wait. Like, people are going to be getting more and more Bitcoin exposure.
Yeah, and I mean, we shouldn't be surprised about Vanguard, because they hired one of the main guys that implemented the spot Bitcoin ETFs from BlackRock, right? So we knew at some point that was going to happen. I mean, Vanguard has been so anti-crypto for so long. That's got to change, right? They see that kind of what you just talked. There's money to be made, and BlackRock's making a ton of it. What I did see is, I mean, they're the number two asset manager in the world, right? They hold $11 trillion in their portfolio. 1% of that is $110 billion. So if this greenlit from Vanguard, there's another $110 billion that will flow in probably pretty quickly into crypto at that point. And that's just at 1%, where we used to talk about 0.5%, 1% is the typical portfolio. And now people are throwing out numbers like 3, 5, 10, 15 or higher. right? So the inflows that could come from Vanguard are huge, and it's probably why a lot of the ETF guys like Matt Hogan at Bitwise is saying you're just getting started with the ETFs, and it's like the gold ETF grew for 8 years in a row. And this is one of those reasons why you could see the Bitcoin ETF grow for multiple years in a row if there's another $100+ billion or multiple hundreds of billions of dollars that's about to flow in.
Yeah, so you've got that side of it. Plus, you've got the side where more conservative individuals get that when they hear that 1-2% exposure, they actually moved and got 1-2% exposure, let's say 4 months after the ETFs launched, right? So $40,000-$50,000 Bitcoin. Well, now their wealthy friends are like, oh, how's that 1-2% going? Well, it's 4% because it doubled in a year. And, you know, okay, well, that's one data point. But next year, if this thing keeps going up and it's 6-8%, their wealthy friends are going to be like, I'm not letting my other friends get wealthier than me by doing nothing. So let's see what they do. Guess what? They're going to buy into some Bitcoin. And I mean, honestly, like if they're really conservative and they've been in gold and gold's had doubled in 12 months, 18 months, they might peel off some of those gold returns and put it into Bitcoin as just hot sauce for their fixed or sound money investment. So I think, you know, of course, I think things are going Bitcoin's way because this is year 8 of me thinking Bitcoin's going up. But yeah, it just looks like a ton of tailwinds to push this thing forward.
Well, while Vanguard is kind of lagging behind everybody, Morgan Stanley is trying to get out ahead of everybody. And they just announced that they're going to partner with Zero Hash, which is a crypto and stablecoin infrastructure provider. They want to allow crypto trading on E-Trade by early next year. And it will start with Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana, but they aren't excluding the possibility of adding more coins in the future. So they're definitely leading the pack from that perspective.
Yeah, Schwab's right in there too. So it's coming. I think Robinhood is way ahead. And guess what Robinhood stock's been doing? A freaking rocket.
Insane. Well, I think they're looking at moving their prediction markets over to Europe now too. Yeah, they're hitting new all-time highs. I think, what is it? They're up like 275% this year.
I don't want to talk about it. I didn't get on it.
All right, let's finish the SEC stuff real quick. So the other thing that Paul Akins had mentioned was that he plans to roll out an innovation exemption for some digital assets by the year end, which this is part of that whole Project Crypto initiative that they have. And it should hopefully ease the rules for ICOs, airdrops, and other crypto activities. So continue to see just a lot of positive discussion happening from the SEC, which has been just such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And on the same note, there was a Senate meeting and I listened to some of it, but I didn't go back and really kind of listen. But man, they talked a lot about de minimis tax exemptions, like a lot. And so that, to me, if they're talking about it that much, we might be able to get it. And one of the person, I didn't know anybody that was talking. So it wasn't like, you know, these industry heads that I'm aware of, but they were from more like on the accounting side of things. But she was talking about like, hey, we can do this in a way that can't be abused. Because if you just said, hey, every transaction under $600 is de minimis and it's not taxable, you could move $1 billion at $599 a pop with an algorithm to just sell the stuff. And so I would assume we're going to see a per transaction de minimis number like $600 and then an annual de minimis number, which I would assume would be something like $10,000. It could be $20,000 because I think they're starting to understand that inflation matters. And if you're going to be making any kind of moves, it's real easy to get to 10,000 pretty quick. So anyway, I think that de minimis tax exemption could be coming up. If it doesn't happen in the next 3 years, then maybe it doesn't, but it could happen. And that's, to me, the cool thing for companies like Stake and Shake and places that are already using Bitcoin. And I think that'll improve even more. And Stake and Shake's restaurant, like store-on-store numbers are up like 15% since they launched the Bitcoin stuff, which I don't know if that has to do with Bitcoin or Beef Tallow or or what, but it's it seems to be working and they seem to be happy with it.
Yeah, I think I was reading that Cynthia Lummis came out and said that the Senate Finance Committee is making some headway on all that legislation, and that's one of the 10 items that they're trying to tackle and really get some more definition on how digital assets are going to be taxed. So, I mean, exciting to see that moving forward. I would love for that to happen a lot quicker than 3 years, but it's government, you never know.
Well, I mean, you know, we're 13 months away from midterms, so we've only got, well, we're almost done for the year because Thanksgiving's next month. So from November to December 31st, they quit basically. So you got like a opportunity in the winter months of next year to get something done, but then it's campaign season. So we'll see. I think that Trump's family's holdings in digital assets and is going to make it a challenge to get anything that is bipartisan, because it's going to look like this. It's so much more of a transparent scam that government is usually way better at covering up this sort of stuff. So I think that they can talk about it more on the campaign trail and as anti the other guys to try to drum up some votes. And so we'll see what happens, but I'm not super optimistic about stuff getting done. Maybe we'll see how midterms go.
Well, we've been talking about the CFTC, and there is a new, I guess, head of the CFTC that was being interviewed, Brian Quintez, and they just announced that he's been pulled. Right? They were worried about some of his relationships with the Voss twins and thinking that was a conflict of interest. And then also because he's a policy lead at A16Z, that some of the lobbying efforts he had would be too much. So unfortunately, you had a guy that was, I think, going to be really good for crypto, that now after 8 months of them looking into it, they're saying they had to start looking for somebody new. And they listed a few of other people being, I guess, potential suitors, but they're no big names that anybody knows, at least I don't know. So we'll kind of see what happens with that and how quickly it takes to turn around and put somebody in the CFTC chairman role.
Yeah, and you know, I just feel like there's a lot of this stuff, the CFTC and SEC, a lot of the stuff seems up in the air. Maybe it's not up in the air on paper, but to actually execute what their plan is, it's just, it hasn't been, nothing's nailed down. So, or it doesn't feel nailed down. So yeah, any movement on that's good for stability.
So I saw a few things related to the state news around the U.S. And one of the more interesting ones was California. So there's a Democrat over there called, his name is Ian Cauldron. He's a former majority leader of the California Assembly. He just announced his candidacy for governor. And his whole point about being governor is he's promised to put Bitcoin at the heart of state policy. And he came out and said that California has always been a leader on technology. It's time for us to get back to our roots and make California the undisputed leader on Bitcoin. So that's wild to see somebody in California making that statement. And I mean, there are a couple of bills that California is looking at, but it's like piloting stablecoin payments for fees and allowing California to bring all the unclaimed property law Bitcoin into their own custody, which I don't think is a great idea, but it is what it is. They still don't have an ability for California to buy, purchase, or hold Bitcoin directly. So this would be really intriguing to see what California decides and if they find somebody that's now a Bitcoin fan there, because there hasn't been a lot of them over there.
Yeah, especially to see a pro Bitcoin Democrat in California, because that could be what California needs. I'm curious if they'll get the votes. David Bailey was big on this. He like put a thing out like huge announcement tomorrow. Da, 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 da. And it was like, oh, this guy's running for governor. But if you look at like Gavin Newsom versus the Bitcoin mindset, it's you know, wildly opposed, but it isn't not blue, right, as far as political parties go. And so this could be like enough of a shift off of the far left stuff to get into some normalcy, because you know, Bitcoin can, the more you follow it and research it and everything, I feel like the more you get grounded and you start to look at like freedom stuff and you know, merit, right? Proof of work stuff. And so, you know, you start to build that into kind of the back end of your brain power. Then I think it helps kind of ground your thoughts and decision makings more long term, and not this, like, I got to get something done in the next 2 months so I can get reelected next year. So I think it's good, but I need to see, like, who else is running, and is he like the 10th man in the running, or is he like one or two? But if you want to go back and you want to look at the Elizabeth Warren race in Massachusetts for the Senate, the Bitcoin guy made a huge dent and really pushed her. And so that was in Massachusetts, where Elizabeth Warren has a stronghold. John Deaton really kind of pushed Elizabeth Warren and made her backtrack on some of her statements, or outright lie about what she'd said in the past, to be more Bitcoin or crypto friendly. And so him running matters, right? So even if he doesn't win, it still matters to get these guys to say more reasonable things about Bitcoin and crypto. So if he can win, well, that's great news, because California is huge. And if you can start to turn the biggest state, you know, from a financial standpoint around, I think it'd be great. And I mean, they're losing wealthy people left and right. They're losing corporations left and right, because they kind of have lost touch with reality when it comes to governing a state in order to benefit everybody in the state. So I'm all for it. I hope he wins. I'm curious to see where he starts.
Yeah, we could probably check Polymarket call sheet and see where what his chances are. I haven't looked at that lately.
Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes, or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast.
Ohio is also in the news. Their State Board of Deposit just unanimously approved a vendor on last week to process cryptocurrency payments for state fees and services. So their Secretary of State came out and said he's excited and ready to be the first to provide it to their customers. And he also said there's a reason why Ohio now ranks in the top 5 states in the nation to do business. And it's mainly because they're not afraid to embrace the tools, trends, and technologies that incentivize job creators to come here. And when you talk about everybody leaving California, there is a ton going to Ohio for exactly this reason. So and I'm seeing it left and right on announcements in my industry. So it's good for Ohio. I'm intrigued to see who actually uses it. I think unless you have that de minimis tax exemption, I'm not sure I would use that to pay any bills, but hey, let's see what happens.
Yeah, and even Vivek Ramaswamy, he was planning on running for governor for Ohio, and now he's got the Bitcoin asset company. What is it? Strive? Is that them? So Ohio's pretty pro Bitcoin, and they've been pro manufacturing and kind of getting some of that stuff going back. So yeah, I mean, if we could get some states moving in the right direction, other states will follow.
Yep. Maryland was also in the news. There's a ransomware group that stole a bunch of sensitive data and personal information from their Department of Transportation. That ransomware group is auctioning off the contents for 30 Bitcoin, which is about $3.4 million. So if you're in Maryland, maybe the 4 of you that are listening in Maryland, update your passwords, change software, enable 2-factor authentication. Maybe one day they'll put it all on the blockchain and make it secure, but that's not happening anytime soon, apparently.
Yeah, and if you're auctioning off ransom data for Bitcoin, you need to have a plan on how to get that Bitcoin out of Bitcoin. I'm not sure how you do that, unless, I guess maybe there's offshore mixers or whatever that still exist, but it doesn't seem like the best, the cleanest way.
Now there's a paper trail to come after you. Yeah, that's for sure. ETF news. So, man, last week was a little rough. The U.S.-based spot Ethereum ETFs saw about $800 million of outflows last week, which is their worst week since the funds began trading. And that was, what, almost a year ago in July, or over a year ago. The spot liquid ETFs didn't do much too better. They lost about $900 million. So it was not a pretty week, but I think things are probably going to turn around here shortly.
Yeah, I would imagine they got that back yesterday.
Treasury companies, Strategy had another purchase. They bought another 196 Bitcoin for about $22 million. They are now just a little over 640,000 Bitcoin. And I was reading a little bit about the Michael Saylor's $1 trillion roadmap, which was really intriguing. He expects to get his assets to $1 trillion and then grow it at 30% a year, which is aggressive. And then he kind of talked about how having capital that's 2x over-collateralized could be a much safer and more conservative than the AAA corporate debt. So it could reinvent the entire financial industry if this really goes the way he's planning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that MicroStrategy's done coming out with financial vehicles. And I mean, they basically just launched their four preferred stock option or stock products. Something's next. You know what I mean? If you think that, oh, let's just take what they have today and drag it out forward into the future, I think you're missing on a lot of things. It's almost like Tesla stock. Like, yeah, they're doing cars, but that's not the future. So I think MicroStrategy at MNAV, it's like 1.4 something, 1.5. So I think that's probably appropriate. They bought 196 Bitcoin, and then a lot of that was in the sale of the common stock at the ATM. Tether bought 8,800 Bitcoin for about $1 billion. Metaplanet bought 5,268 Bitcoin for $600 million. MicroStrategy is not 200 Bitcoin in a week is really peanuts for MicroStrategy. So I think you'll see them come out with some things to generate some more buying. But I mean, we're coming up again on another quarterly earnings report. And if Bitcoin price does what you think it's going to do, their quarterly earnings report's going to be wild again.
I feel like I read that they're having a second quarterly income report that shows a positive income. So
I can't remember. It's single digit billions of dollars in.
Yeah.
They're calling it earnings, right? But it's unrealized gains from the Bitcoin treasury stock. So we'll see how the market kind of handles them. But again, I mean, you look at what Robinhood has done since they've been into the S&P 500. And when you're talking about MicroStrategy or Strategy entering the S&P 500, they're going to enter when they enter in the top maybe 150. So they're going to come in with a pretty good allocation of those passive funds flowing in, because they're all based on like the number one company in the S&P 500 gets more weight than the number 500. So the higher up you go, the more funds come in. So it's kind of the winner takes most kind of situation. So if they already start up at the top, then that's going to open up a lot of floodgates for funds to flow in. And then we all know what he does with funds when they flow in.
Well, you mentioned Tether, and I want to talk about them in a couple of stablecoin news in a second. But one of the other things that I did see from a treasury company news perspective is Sharply Gaming, which they are NASDAQ listed. They have one of the largest public Ethereum treasuries, I think, not the largest, but they still hold 838,000 Ethereum, which is more than that $3.3 billion. They just announced that they're going to tokenize their common stock directly on Ethereum using Superstate's Opening Bell platform. So they said it's going to be they're going to be the first publicly traded company to tokenize their shares on Ethereum. Although I think BTCS had done something back in 2023 with some of their Series 5 preferred shares. So it's kind of maybe with an asterisk at being the first, but it's still, I think that's huge news to put all their stock, their common stock onto Ethereum. That's going to be kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that whether it comes from the top down and the brokerage houses tokenize the shares, or if it goes bottom up, and I mean, honestly, private companies could do this and skip the IPO and all the difficulties of getting listed. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you can just do stuff. It's pretty wild.
So you mentioned Tether, and they added almost 9,000 Bitcoin to their balance sheet. So they're currently over 100,000 Bitcoin. But one of the more interesting things is they've just tried to go after another fundraising round. So they're seeking between 15 and 20 billion in fresh equity capital in exchange for about 3% of its shares, which means that this would value Tether at about $500 billion, which makes them one of the world's most valuable private firms, right up next to SpaceX and OpenAI, and which is kind of insane. They also hold $127 billion in U.S. treasuries as of Q2. So that puts them among the top 20th largest holders. And they're comparable with a bunch of the sovereign nations like UAE and Germany. And they're just behind Saudi Arabia. So even though everybody else isn't really buying U.S. debt, the stablecoin companies like Tether are buying it a ton.
And I think Tether still has under 100 employees.
Yes. I think it's close to 200 now.
Is but it close to 200 now?
Yeah.
But I haven't seen a number. It was 60. When they really started talking down in the billions a lot, it was 60. So I hadn't seen a number. But let's say it's under 200, that's fine. That's a crazy $500 billion valuation with 200 employees is a wild, wild thing to be able to do in business. Like, beyond unicorn stuff.
Yeah.
Now, it may happen more with all the AI stuff, right? They could have one-man businesses that do multi-billion valuations, but they're definitely way out in front of this leverage and efficiency front.
And, I mean, they still haven't really done a ton with their new USDT, which is going to be the new stablecoin that is USA-focused, right? So, I mean, the growth is going to be interesting to watch there. They're doing some cool things, and hopefully it continues.
Yeah, and they also have a pretty nice Tether or a pretty nice Bitcoin stash. So if Bitcoin goes up like we think it will, then they're also a winner on that side. So I've got, Tether's something else, man. It used to be super sketchy, remember? Like, does Tether actually have any assets? Is it backed by anything? And all this other stuff, are they just printing Tether so that they can boost the Bitcoin price? I mean, there's wild stuff. And I mean, maybe it's like a fake it till you make it situation where that you could play a bunch of games when you're little, but now that they're the biggest shark in the, you know, in the ocean, they got to play it straight. Cause I feel like they're playing it straight. Like I don't think that I think they've seen so many people fail. The FTXs and all the nonsense, three errors capital. When you start to rehypothecate and you start to make little IOUs and get out above your skis, you fall on your face and then you tank the entire market. So I think as far as these companies go, I like what Tether's doing.
They're around the corner in the Bahamas from FTX. So I think once the whole FTX thing happened, everybody thought Tether was in on it, and it got a lot of negative press for a while, but they seem to be doing a good job and they're expanding into a lot of other things. So it's impressive, and I'm definitely keeping an eye on them and following.
Yep.
So some other stablecoin news that I did read about. So Cloudflare, which you've probably seen kind of helping protect the internet, they just announced that they are going to launch a US dollar-backed stablecoin called the Net Dollar. And it's going to be to help propel the future of the AI-driven finance on the internet. What they pretty much came out and said was that the web needs a stablecoin that will work to power agents, micropayments, and other transactions. And that they're going to support many flavors, but we're excited about Cloudflare's Net Dollar to be able to achieve being purpose-built for these needs. So if you look at what's going on, there's been this growing focus on AI agent payments infrastructure as of late, because Cloudflare also announced that it was going to establish the X402 Foundation in partnership with Coinbase, which is going to be an entity designed to develop an open internet standard for digital payments. And that happened shortly after Google came out and revealed that it had an AI agent-focused payments protocol backed by Coinbase, Ethereum, and PayPal, and others. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, and it's going to be intriguing to see what happens. But I never expected Cloudflare to come out with their own stablecoin, but now it's happening.
Yeah, and I think we continue to see a lot of these companies jump in. I mean, you mentioned PayPal, you know, that they're making moves on their stablecoin side and their, you know, custody side. So I you know, bull run stuff, right? People just start, oh man, there's money to be made. They got to start creating little business units and things like that to kind of capture it. And no entrepreneurs come out of the blue to try to get things done. So I think, you know, Cloudflare is just one of them. We'll see a lot more in the next 6 months.
Yeah. Circle was the other big guy from the stablecoin perspective. And they just had an executive come out and saying that Circle is considering whether or not to enable reversible USDC transactions, which is interesting because it would potentially boost the usefulness of stablecoins by the TradFi side, but it goes against the entire crypto ethos of immutability. So they right now can currently fully freeze or blacklist accounts, but they can't reverse. And I don't think there's a set plan. They're just exploring it right now, but they're developing their L1 called Arc. And they would probably, if they did something like this, it would be on a layer two, not a layer one. So I think it's something to keep your eye on, but it is wild to be talking about this because this would be kind of an interesting first.
Yeah, you know, I had this in my notes to talk about because basically your digital dollar-y, you know, Visa chargebacks and all, you know, you're basically copying the existing system, but you're putting it on a blockchain. Is that bad? It's probably not bad, but I mean, it doesn't solve the problem of, you know what, we don't like some of your social media posts. We're going to reverse these transactions, right? So as far as the kind of the freedom side of this, getting back to like sovereignty and things like that, this is a bad step. Getting into like massive adoption by the entire public, it's probably a step forward. So not good in general, but it would make it easier to consume for small businesses and individuals. But it makes everything wide open for abuse.
Yeah. Well, so there's also a European-based stablecoin that is being launched here shortly, and 9 of the major European banks have joined forces to launch it. ING is kind of the big name that I saw in there. The other banks I've never even heard of, to be honest with you, if they're the 9 largest. But they're expecting to issue it in the second half of 2026. And they formed a company in the Netherlands, and it's going to be licensed and supervised by the Dutch Central Bank as an e-money institution. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's got to be a ton of this stuff going on. Like, as much as you and I are like reading, paying attention, watching social media, and like paying attention to headlines and everything else, how much of this stuff is slipping by us that we don't see, right? I mean, you just basically through like whatever banks are involved, you're like, I've never heard of these guys. How many of them aren't even making headlines? I mean, there's just so much activity going on right now. It's really good to see. So I think if you, for every topic we cover, go ahead and assume there's 5 to 10 more kind of similar that we're not covering.
So some other country news here in around the world. Australia was in the news. It's actually kind of something positive, right? Which I feel like we haven't really said a lot of positive stuff about Australia. They are releasing some draft legislation to regulate digital asset platforms, which they're proposing a framework that would really extend financial services laws to crypto businesses in an effort to bolster the consumer protections and provide some clarity for the industry. So this is the cornerstone of their digital asset roadmap that they published back in March, and it would finally align Australia with its international peers. So it's exciting to see that they're kind of catching up with everybody else. I think they're going to formally define a couple of new financial products, and one's going to be the digital assets platforms and token custody platforms perspective. And then the other thing that they'll do is set out rules for some of the wrap tokens and the public token infrastructure and staking and things like that, which those are areas that don't really fit into the normal box for a lot of these traditional financial instruments.
No, I good for Australia. I feel like for years we talked negatively about them, and in the last 6 months we've had a couple positive green shoots showing up. So I think that if you put some legislation together that at least outlines what your expectations are for companies and consumer protections, and you know, just like roadmap, rules of the road, here's how you navigate our country, I think you'll get entrepreneurs popping out, man. I mean, you got a lot of people selling businesses. They're looking for their next business to start and grow. And it's either going to be digital assets or AI based, or it's going to be old school brick mortar service based, right? I mean, I don't think you're going to, nobody's like, man, I can't wait to open up my new retail big box store. Like that's not happening. So I think, if you're a country and you're looking to grow GDP, you know, you need to make it easy for these guys to start companies.
You know, another country that we've talked about, it's kind of surprising that they aren't leading the world, is South Korea. And their ruling Democratic Party just established a digital asset task force to draft some comprehensive stablecoin and crypto legislation. So one of the reasons this is important is South Korea had over $40 billion in digital assets transferred abroad in Q1 of 2025, half of which was stablecoins. And that's a lot of money. And you would think South Korea would have it coming in with everybody that's involved in crypto. So I think they are trying to figure out how they can fix this, and I'm intrigued to see what they do.
I totally agree. You know, per capita, we always talk about South Korea per capita being the most, you know, ingrained in digital assets and speculation trading and all of these things. So, but man, $40 billion in a quarter, you know, that's not, you can almost stop talking about per capita. It's real money in gross terms. So I think South Korea, Australia, the more these things go, guess what? Their neighbor China is going to be loosening up and kept keeping up, because, you know, that it's just how it works. You know, these politicians, they're not in the business of sticking their neck out. But if three or four other necks are already stuck out, they don't have a problem with it.
France is in the news again. Once again, it's not really positive news. I know you're surprised. Oh, it wasn't a wrench attack this time, which I feel like we've been talking about them and wrench attacks for quite a while. But Telegram's founder, Pavel Durov, came out and said that the French intelligence sought the removal of opposition channels ahead of Moldova's 2024 election. So he pretty much coming out and saying that when he got arrested, it was France was trying to affect the Moldova elections. And now that Moldova has a pro-European party leading a new parliamentary vote, there's a bunch of claims of Russian interference. So I think the big thing around all this is it just underscores this rising state pressure on digital privacy platforms, from messaging apps to crypto networks. And we're seeing all these countries want to control the messaging and what people get. And they're, if you really want a freedom platform, I think the crypto side has helped out tremendously, not only in, not really that much in France, but more so in a lot of these other countries that governments are shutting down their way to talk. And you're seeing things like Nostr help connect people to one another.
Yeah, I think without sounding like a conspiracy theorist, I think a lot of these elections are being meddled with, and the stakes are high enough that they can actually keep things quiet. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about it before, the Guatemalan election that was on blockchain to help kind of bolster their election security. The problem with that is the people that are in charge of making elections secure are the ones that also are fine with them being fixed. So I'm curious to see how that actually happens. I don't know if you can have a grassroots campaign to fix elections. Honestly, the United States would be one of the easier places to do it, because the elections are all state-based. So you could have a small state that's like, hey, we're going to do it. We don't think we have a problem, but before we do have a problem, we're going to go ahead and make sure that our elections are verifiable and you know, everything's tracked, and we can do it on the blockchain very easily and cheaply. So we'll see. I'm not very optimistic.
Turkey was also in the news. So they are apparently drafting some legislation to grant its financial intelligence unit, a SOC, some expanded powers to freeze bank and crypto accounts linked to suspected criminal activity. So if you, I probably don't remember, but back in, I think, June of 24, the Financial Action Task Force removed Turkey from its gray list, which Turkey was excited that they finally did that. But I think the problem with all this is that this proposal is more of like moving towards a big brother state thinly veiled as compliance. So having all these powers over the bank accounts is pretty questionable, but it's kind of going back to the opposite of what the entire idea of crypto was, which is value self-custody, it values censorship resistance and everything like that. So while Turkey's doing this, it's probably not going to help their view as a major player in the global crypto arena if they pass something like this that shuts everything down at a whim when they believe there's a problem.
Yeah, and Turkey, I mean, if you look, as far, Turkey is like a G20 country. I mean, they're a big player. Their inflation's been pretty wild for at least 4 or 5 years. And so they're a country that really actually needs to embrace this stuff. Not that the country from the government standpoint needs to, but the people do, right? I mean, they're, you know, preserving your buying power. You need to do that. Otherwise, you're just working your life away. So they need to be as friendly as they can be. And they need to give their people like a path on how to do this, what's legal, what's not, or what's okay. And anything that they do that's not going in that direction is a problem.
Yeah, no, I agree. Switzerland was also in the news. 21 Shares is launching a new ETP for Juniper, which you probably know what Juniper is. Juniper is pretty much the largest DEX on the Solana blockchain. So once again, new tokens are coming out and we'll see who's interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if I were an ETF holder, brokerage house, or whatever they're called, I would be launching these things left and right globally, wherever I could get to. Honestly, I might target the countries that are not very friendly to Bitcoin or crypto directly and try to backdoor things. And I mean, kind of like what Metaplanet did with Japan, is give the population and a place to go to get into digital assets. And, you know, whether it's because they have kind of onerous tax implications for digital asset gains, or they just make it difficult or whatever, I'd be all over the place.
Some other actually really big news too was from Swift, and I'm sure most people use Swift all the time and don't even realize it, but they are that global financial messaging network. They just announced they're going to incorporate a blockchain-based shared ledger into its infrastructure stack, which will give a 24/7 cross-border payment use case perspective. So they're basing this design on some conceptual prototypes that they designed with Consensus, the Ethereum company, and they're collaborating with over 30 financial institutions to get feedback on the ledger, and then hopefully later supports implementation. That list includes places like Bank of America, HSBC, and a couple of other big banks around the world. So very interesting to see that they're going to use the blockchain. I guess I'm wondering if they're going to create their own or if they're going to put it on top of something like Ethereum. But I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, if Swift gets into the blockchain business, that kind of opens up the green light for everybody else if Swift's on it. I mean, that's a good, you know, I don't know if you've been to these like new startup companies, you go to their website and then you scroll down a little bit and it lists all the companies that they're the customers of. Like having Swift listed for blockchain, that'd be a nice like credibility boost, I feel like.
Yeah. And then Canada was in the news here recently too. So I think back in 2021, 2022 in Ontario, there was a kidnapping. They kidnapped this lady. They demanded $1 billion, I think, in Bitcoin, or maybe it was $1 million, something like that, for ransom. They abducted her, they tortured her, they sexually assaulted her. And the guy that did it was just sentenced to 13 years. I think he's been in jail for 3 already. But there was a minor that did it with him, and he is supposed to be sentenced, I think, this week. So, I mean, I guess the only good news is if you do stuff like this, you're starting to get punished. I don't know if 13 years is enough at that point, but I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, like, you know, we talk a lot about like financial crimes. Like you start talking about actual violent crimes. It's, yeah, you need to get the book thrown at you.
So We've talked a little bit about Bitcoin lending in the past, but there's a couple of new companies that have made some announcements. One is Templar. Templar Protocol is, they just launched their mainnet. They are calling it the first Cypher lending protocol that is allowing Bitcoin holders to borrow stablecoins against their native Bitcoin without any intermediaries or KYC requirements. So that's really interesting, right? They've already secured $100 million in lending commitments. They're getting away from the whole traditional centralized lending platforms and wrapped token solutions that have really been dominating the Bitcoin lending. So they come out and they said Bitcoin was created to replace banks, not be a novel toy asset for Wall Street to financialize and control. They do have a synonymous founder, the Royal Fools, which is kind of interesting. But it's kind of, he's saying he's helping restore Bitcoin back to its proper place as a permissionless, censorship-resistant asset in the context of borrowing and lending. So their mainnet is live and accessible through their website. I have not tried it, but it is kind of interesting that it's happening. And this is kind of a cool way to be able to get stablecoins without having to KYC yourself all over the place.
Yeah, no, it's time to see more and more of this stuff.
The other one that is similar so is OnRamp, and they are a Bitcoin-only financial services company. They just launched an institutional-grade asset management offering that is built on top of their multi-signature, multi-institutional, and multi-jurisdictional custody platform. So they are trying to become this full-reserve Bitcoin bank, and they're leveraging Bitcoin's unique paradigm-shifting technology in partnership with institutional custodians like Bitcoin, BitGo, CoinCover, and Tetra Trust. So this was Michael Taguma. He used to be at Google, and then he was at Unchained Capital. He is kind of trying to make institutional-grade custody democratized. And so he'll offer this full range of financial services to Bitcoiners of all sizes, whether you want to do IRAs, trust, Bitcoin-backed loans, inheritance planning, or anything like that. So some more exciting stuff to see that it's going to be hopefully easier to deal with Bitcoin as things progress as well.
Yeah, so OnRamp, they have a pretty decent podcast that I listen to from time to time, and I like what they do. I haven't used their service, so I'm constantly trying to figure out like what self-custody options I need to have and everything. And they're one of the kind of the top two that I'm looking at to, if I'm going to make a move to them. They're Bitcoin only. They the way they talk is in line with the way I think, which is good. But I really need somebody, like a company, to take off and be the leader and give me some confidence, because I don't know if there's 12 guys there that kind of are really high performing guys, but you know, these companies don't have a long track record. So I think that if they could do a full reserve Bitcoin bank, they could really kind of grow roots, that my confidence in somebody, something like that, would increase. And that would be the same for everybody else that's got the same problem with me with Bitcoin custody. And, you know, the more different revenue angles they can have and the more legitimate they could be, then the more Bitcoin will flow to them. So I think that's a good move.
Ethereum had some news out there too. There's this new report that just came out, which they've been interviewing a bunch of the core developers and researchers and investors and community leaders and trying to look inside to see how Ethereum is perceived from multiple vantage points. And it kind of came back as there are 8 different stakeholders or stereotypes, archetypes, the guardians that are defending the original ethos, the pioneers that are expanding new frontiers, the translators that are bringing ideas to a broader world, the challengers that are pressing on perceived stagnation, and then you had traders, institutions, and Web3 communities that round out the picture. And what was interesting in reading it is almost like their biggest fight is not with rival blockchains like Solana, but it's the internal groups that all have different views of where they want Ethereum to go. So hopefully this will allow them to start having some interesting conversations now that they've done this, but it's kind of cool to see that they looked internally and said, what do we need to do to be able to get bigger and one of the best blockchains out there?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got to figure out what they need to do to capture their piece of the pie or grow the pie over the next, I don't know, this 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, I don't know, but this is the time to grow.
So another couple of companies that were interesting, and these are probably going to be very high level, but Botanix Labs, which is a Bitcoin layer two, they just launched their STBTC, which is a one-to-one Bitcoin-backed token that is stablecoin, right? That is redistributing 50% of the network fees as yield. So they've had this live for 2 months, processed like 10 million transactions at 100% uptime, and their APR is like 34%, right? So this is kind of crazy because it's early. He expects the APR to get down to 5 to 6%, but it is one of those ways that you can get yield on your Bitcoin, which is intriguing. Starknet is doing something similar. They are doing a layer two as well. They have just rolled out a $100 million Stark incentive from their staking mechanics to really position their rollup as Bitcoin's execution layer. So they're branding it as Bitcoin Fi on Starknet, and Botanix is a rival, Babylon's another one, but they seem to be doing something different. The only problem is that they are relying on wrapped assets like wrapped Bitcoin, Bitcoin, all those, rather than native Bitcoin. So the users are gaining smart exposure via smart contracts on Starknet versus ultimately holding the native Bitcoin on their own. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with these companies, but it is definitely a way that seems to be, there's options out there to get yield from Bitcoin, which there hasn't been for a while. And the ones that were almost went under for a different reason.
Yeah, no thanks.
So on the Solana side, Phantom Cash just got announced by the Phantom Wallet. They are a new consumer payments offering that transforms their wallet into a broader money app. This will allow users to fund balances instantly with a bank credit card, buy or sell crypto without fees, use the Google Pay or Apple Pay through Visa, send money to peers, all this great stuff. All that's underpinned by Cash, which is a stablecoin that is issued via Bridge. Bridge is the infrastructure company that Stripe acquired earlier this year. And it is, so Phantom Cash is the first deployment of Open Issuance, which is the platform that Stripe unveiled at its annual product showcase in New York, which allows businesses to launch and manage their own stablecoins with just a few lines of code. So this is going to be really cool. We've talked about MetaMask doing their MUSD and Hyperliquid doing their USDH. Those are also going to use the Open Issuance platform too. But yeah, so now for a few lines of code, you can create your own stablecoin, and it'll be interesting to see how it's used throughout these companies.
Yeah, no, that'll be interesting.
In addition, Stripe just also applied for a federal banking charter to meet the U.S. stablecoin guidelines. So they're moving forward with some good stuff there.
Yeah, and it's good to see companies like Stripe being involved too. I mean, it's not Swift, but they're a major player.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about Ripple a lot, but the big news from Ripple is their CTO is planning to leave by the end of the year, which leave in quotations because he's really just joining the board and not doing his typical CTO role anymore. He's been there for 13 years. So I think he has quite a bit of XRP and he's doing just fine right now.
I would imagine so.
So Tim Draper was also in the news. He was one of the guys that come out and said Bitcoin is going to hit 250K a year or so ago. He also bought 30,000 Bitcoin for about $19 million. From the Silk Road shutdown. What he is now saying is that retailers will quickly go from saying, I accept Bitcoin, to I only accept Bitcoin, which kind of makes sense based on what we're talking about. And I'm wondering how quickly that means. Are we talking about years or decades at this point?
Oh, yeah. And I think what we'll see is we'll see pricing in Bitcoin, and then we'll see, yeah, we accept dollars, but there's a 5% increase in if you pay us in, because we've got to convert that into Bitcoin.
Yeah. Jim Cramer was in the news again. So he just came out and he recommended his followers to buy cryptocurrencies, which is usually not a good thing. That's a little worried.
But you know, I think it's hard to tell if I would rather be a fan of Peter Schiff, who just constantly tells me don't buy Bitcoin, buy gold, like constantly. No matter what the price is, or if I'm a fan of Cramer and I'm getting yanked around and buy, sell. I don't know which one I would prefer. I think just buying Bitcoin and not paying attention is probably my favorite.
Well, he posted the national debt clock, which shows we owe like $37.6 trillion, and said buy crypto. That's a way out. And I think there's even the world's smartest man who has the highest IQ over in Hong Kong or something like that just tweeted out that he's realized that Bitcoin's the only answer. So he's converted 100% of his assets over to crypto. So maybe people are starting to get the message.
Yeah, Bitcoin seems to be the Ponzi scheme that attracts the smartest people in the world.
Exactly. I know you probably don't care about this, but Sandbox is a Ethereum gaming metaverse. They are building their own L2 now. They're going to use zero knowledge technology, right? They're going to call it SandChain. It'll use the Sand token as a native gas and utility token. And their goal for SandChain is to become the home for creators on chain that will enable them to own their content, generate money from their identities, and manage their communities without losing out the platforms they create on. So exciting to see that. I think it will do well. I own some of Sand, so I'm hoping it does well too, selfishly.
Yeah, I mean, again, I can't believe gaming hasn't found a way to make this work in a bigger way. So I'm like, go for it, figure it out.
Token 2049 just happened in Singapore here last week. I'm not going to dive a ton into that, but what I did see is they had this build off kind of thing where about 223 projects built on Solana were entered in. Six of them made the finalist category, which means they were able to present to a group of VC investors. The interesting piece is if you look at the three main categories that they came from, one was stablecoin networks, one was AI-enabled wealth advisors, and the third was DePIN, so the decentralized physical infrastructure. So exciting to see, and we've talked about some of that type of stuff already, but hopefully that will continue. And I think one of the ones that I saw that was intriguing, just because we both have electric vehicles, is a company called DeCharge, which is a DePIN team that is touting itself as the helium of electric vehicle charging, which I'm intriguing to see if they can find a way to maximize all the EV chargers out there that aren't being used.
Yeah, and there's definitely some neat things that could be done out here. I mean, it just to kind of spin that off, all the AI, all the database, all the stranded power and all this other stuff, like in the next 5 years, we're going to see some pretty interesting things pop up like this, like all of this built up infrastructure that all the capital expenses aren't even laid. Now, what can we do with it? So I'm looking forward to seeing some of that innovation come up.
And speaking of DePIN, there's a project called Double Zero, which the SEC just came out and announced that it would not pursue enforcement as long as their native token transfers remain within the programmatic utility-based parameters, which this is kind of a big deal that you actually had the SEC coming out and saying that we're going to allow a DePIN company to have a token and that it doesn't fall under the traditional Howey test. And that because now the SEC is recognizing the functional nature of this, that they're creating this space for compliant utility-driven innovation in crypto at home in America. So, man, even the company came out and said he'd like to thank the SEC and the administration for their leadership in bringing clarity that helps crypto grow in the U.S. So, I mean, that's exciting to see, and I hope more things like that continue to happen.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's kind of weird. You know, I'm a Bitcoin guy, but I like to see all of this different people try different things. Some of this stuff's going to work.
And then I know you don't want to talk about NFTs, but I did see something interesting from the NFT space. We've been talking a lot about Hyperliquid here recently. They just distributed their Hyper NFT collection on Sunday to some of the early users. So it's about 4,600 NFTs. Most of those were from the participants from last November's Genesis events. So I think there was like 4,300 of them were the event participants. That NFT had a floor price of just over 1,400 HYPE, which was close to $70,000 per NFT. And I think it's come down to like 55,000. But I think one of them sold for just under 10,000 HYPE, which was $470,000. So what's crazy about this is they said that from time to time, the NFTs may be associated with certain benefits, features, or entitlements, aka utility. But as of right now, there's no utility promised or guaranteed under these terms. So that is wild. If you would have got involved in Hyperliquid a year ago, you could have walked away with 70 grand.
Yeah, this isn't for me. If you got involved with, there's like maybe 700,000 other things too, you'd have $0. It's like some of them go big and they make the news. Almost all of them don't. So yeah, this NFTs are not for me. There's too many things to focus on that I enjoy more than NFTs.
Well, Bitwise just also filed a proposal for the Hyperliquid ETF. So that's the first company that's filed one for Hyperliquid. So they're getting a lot of attention. That's all out of my end. What else did I miss?
The only thing I had that we didn't check the box is the UK, the Keir Starmer, they're the Labour Party Prime Minister, center left, free of charge digital ID mandatory for all people in the UK. So you can drop center anything if you're mandating people to have a digital ID so you can track them and kind of impose on their freedoms. This is not good. And, you know, we talk about Bitcoin. I talk about Bitcoin like a financial asset all the time. Almost 90% of the stuff I talk about is dollar value going up, blah, blah, blah. Man, if you live in a country like UK and you're hearing all this crap about digital IDs mandatory, if you're not getting into Bitcoin right now, then I have nothing, like no sympathy for you 5 years from now when you're like, oh, man, here I am. I can't do anything with my money. I can't buy what I want to buy. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's like, yep, we told you this was going to happen. All you had to do is watch anything. This is not mainstream information, but I mean, in the United States, at least, the political climate, we talk about stuff like this, right? I mean, we talked about U.S. central bank digital currencies and why they can't be done. And I mean, Trump talked about it on his campaign trail. This stuff has been talked about for years. And it's been talked about in like kind of mainstream for 2 years at least. So now they're actually saying it to you in a Western country, buy some Bitcoin. You don't have to put all your freaking entire net worth into Bitcoin, but you need an insurance policy and Bitcoin's it. So the UK is doing it. I don't know what they're doing, why they're doing it. It seems dumb. They seem like they're giving up their entire country and this is part of it. So that's the one piece that I had to throw in.
So it's funny, I saw that. My first thought was, is this AI? This can't be real. I mean, Starmer is probably one of the least liked politicians in the world. I think anybody in the UK likes him, no matter what side you're on. And I was just like, this can't be serious. But
no, I'm with you. Every time I see something like this, I'm like, no, okay, well, I got to get off of whatever I'm reading this on, and I got to go Google it, and I got to find a reputable source and make sure that I'm getting the right story, because it just doesn't, it seems like it's just too out in left field, but it doesn't appear to be. It appears to be what he said out loud on a microphone.
If you listen to him talk, this is actually not a big surprise. So he says a lot of really dumb things, and this is just another one of them.
Here we go.
Awesome. Well, we covered a lot there. So as always, this has been fantastic, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we come up with next week.
Oh, October is great. It'll be fun.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.